And we've already heard a bit about stories of our lives, remembering the past for the future by way of the Vespers tonight, Abraham and the Jesus story in the middle of the muddle where we find God in our story. We've also tried this topic a couple of times in forums earlier in the summer here at Holden, and it's because of what we found there that we decided to try it again this week. We found in talking about the place of stories in people's lives that most folks remembered some stories between the generations that were important for their own lives. When we just sat around here and talked a while, people started remembering stories that they decided were important to them. They heard them from grandparents, or they heard them from someone outside the family but in the neighborhood. And so stories between the generations became important, and I think maybe you recall the kind of interest that was shown everywhere after the television series Roots showed. There was a surge of interest in people finding out about their own ancestors and the story of their own family. We also found out when we were sitting around and talking about this that children today aren't hearing many stories. That there isn't a lot of storytelling of children, true children, today. The stories that children are getting are meant most of all from someone else and through the tube. Then we found out that grandparents and other folks of that generation do want to tell the stories. One person put it, we would like to bless our grandchildren with stories. And it was interesting the last time we did this, that the young folks, and they're not here tonight, but mostly staff and teenagers were all hanging up there in the balcony listening while the older folks were down here telling the stories. They wanted to listen. So I think we have this rather interesting but rather disturbing reality of people saying that stories are important, have been important, that they do want to bless the children by telling the stories, they want to pass something along, that children aren't hearing many stories being passed along, but that stories have been vital for past generations. And what time we want to take now tonight, I think, are just to hear some stories. I would like to know, just in this little gathering here, whether there are any stories that you remember which you regard as being important to you, whether they were stories from family or from elsewhere, whether they were factual or fictional. It's just a question of whether in your own life there have been stories that have been important. And then if you would be willing to share those stories, tell one or another of them. Do you remember stories that in retrospect seem important or seem precious to you? Yeah.
My dad told of sailing, like when he was a 15, 16-year-old kid, sailed from Norway, mostly on British ships. And some of them were
professionally, was he a sailor?
Not a merchant.
Oh, yeah.
Seamen. And some of them were the full-rigged sailing ships, that sort of thing. Some were schooners and all. And the part I remember the best was this saying that they came from Australia over to South America, to Peru. They didn't find much wind. It took them 72 days. It's called no refrigeration, that sort of thing.
Yeah. And you remember listening to these stories.
Yes. And I remember seeing him, even when he didn't realize he was doing it. If we had biscuits buttons or anything, he opened them and glanced at them.
So, check them out.
Real happened. Uh-huh.
Was that a family affair? I mean, would people gather around to listen to the stories, or was it sort of a normal conversation around a dinner table or
just
something?
Normal, and then, incidental, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But we were fortunate. We didn't, really for TV. And for quite a while, we didn't even have radio, so mm-hmm. that didn't interfere either. So mm-hmm. there was more talking.
Yeah. Mentioning grandfather sailing from Norway and so on. One thing I remember from my own childhood was when a group of us, there were about five of us, all boys and maybe 4 years difference from the youngest to the oldest. And we would go over to Anderson household and Mr. Anderson was, I think, in his 80s, and we were probably 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. And he would tell us stories. We'd sit out on the lawn. In his retirement, he wove nets, fishing nets, which he then sent to some place that sold them through catalogs. And he'd learned that in Norway. But I was so impressed. We were sitting around, he'd tell us about when the flood of 1907, and the water was this high, and I can tell you just exactly how high it was because I remember those stories. But the thing that I'll never forget is that he was alive when Abraham Lincoln was shot,
mm-hmm.
and he was only 6 or 7 years old, but he remembered that, and I just found that awesome that I was sitting there in the presence of someone who remembered when Lincoln was shot. It's interesting. That we recall that. Excuse me.
Our family, our grandchildren love to hear the grandfather tell stories about when he was young. But I'd like to tell a story about his family rather than mine, because in listening to the stories of the generations older than I am, and we're the grandparents now, I have... it made me realize how easy and simple our lives are now with the push buttons that do our work for us compared to the way they were living back in the days when they made their own candles and they washed by hand and all that sort of thing. But this particular story concerned trying to get water in Montana. The family had moved from Indiana to Montana, and it was in the eastern section of Montana that was quite barren and very windy, and there were a great many hardships in those days. And Roy's father had tried to dig a well and had no water, and had tried again, and there was still no water. So for the third time, he was going to set some dynamite to blast out some rock to get water. And he asked his wife to let him down with the windlass into the hole so he could set the dynamite. And she refused. She said he'd be killed, for sure. But he was a stubborn man. So he had the dynamite and all of the things you need. They hold something in their teeth. Now, I don't know about how they do it. But anyhow, he took all of this material that he needed and inched himself down into that hole, set the dynamite, and then she had to get him out of there. Mm-hmm. And so she got him out just in time, but the little children, which would have been my husband and his brother, and were watching from a distance, and it was just a miracle that they got out before that thing blew sky high, and still no water. So that's when they moved on to the state of Washington.
I see. Yeah.
Well, I have just a short one to mention. And in our particular case, Dad was so much older than I was that he didn't talk very much because he was 67 when I was born.
Really?
And he was in the Civil War for 3 years. And he never talked about it, but we found out afterwards that through the pictures, we're sure it was him that was on Sherman's March to the Sea.
I'm kidding.
But he never said anything about it.
That is amazing.
So I'm talking about the younger generations wanting to hear stories. And my family's never been for telling stories. When I was in high school, I was asked to do a report on the Depression. Mm. And I'm from Canada. And my mother lived through the Depression in BC. My father lived in Saskatchewan. So I did a comparison. And through that, I found out a lot about my mother's life, but my father still wouldn't talk. And I was kind of crying one day, and he just said, "Does he tell your teacher that it was so terrible, I wouldn't want a rat to have to live through it?"
Really?
To this day, he won't tell stories.
So. Really? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I had a high school, not high school, your mentioning of high school reminded me of it. When I was in college, there was an assignment in an American history course that to study the patterns of immigration to this country from elsewhere, we were to take our own family and first study the major patterns of immigration and then study where our family fit in those if they did. So the Scandinavians tended to cluster in certain areas, and the Germans elsewhere, and so on. And there was no family tree in our family on my father's side. And so I had a dickens of a time getting information about the family in order then to find out about where they fit in the whole thing. But through a great uncle who then knew someone else, I managed to run down where my grandparents had come from. They didn't know where they had come from because my grandmother was only 6 months old and her parents were killed not too long after she came. And my grandfather was about 3 years old, and for whatever reasons that they didn't tell stories or he didn't have a recollection. Anyway, through a series of running down court records and so on, I found out and had the pleasure of telling my grandfather and my grandmother that they were born in the same small village in Schleswig-Holstein. And they didn't know that until they were 60 years old. Yeah. Did any of you have families in which stories were passed down? So that from one generation, did you?
Yeah, but I don't want to be talking so much.
Yeah, lots of time here and not a big
well,
problem.
Well, this would be several generations back, but my grandmother came during the time from Scotland during the time that there was quite a little religious persecution at that time in the part of Scotland that the family came from. And some of the family who had become Christian Protestants, I think maybe it was during the Reformation, does that sound right? They were actually physically persecuted. Some of them were tied to pilings out when the tide was out and left to drown when the tide came in again, because the crown at that time didn't, that was one of the ways that they were persecuting the Protestant Christians.
And that was passed down in your family?
That's come down. One of the things that came down in from in our family history.
Yeah. Someone had a hand over here. Well, yeah.
This isn't so far back, but the my great grandmother, I even have a little postcard with a picture of her spinning and knitting at the age of 90-some. During the First World War, she was working for the Christian Democratic Party in Denmark. So. And she was a pretty hard-nosed old girl, I guess. And they said she was the boss. You never heard anything about grandfather. But then this old lady was pretty active.
Were any of you told stories which were, I mean, may have been totally fictional, maybe fairy tales, maybe something else that were just favorites that you remember that were important in the family or seemed to be important by virtue of the fact that they were kept alive? Surprises me a bit. I would have thought that there would be some.
I could tell about my grandfather, I suppose. He was minus one arm up to the elbow, and I wondered how this happened, and my dad told me that they were thrashing using horsepower, and whoever was tending the feeder and putting the bundles into the feeder walked away from it, and in so doing, the eveners were hitting the horses in the heels, and my grandfather loved horses so much he didn't like to see that, so he went up to the machine and was going to hold a bundle in there to create some resistance so this would not occur. But the result was that the bundle caught and it took his hand in there and it took his arm off, and that was how he lost his arm. But strange as it may seem, both my grandfathers had one arm missing. I never found out how my father lost his arm.
My husband's father, or grandfather, his aunt wrote a story in the paper about his coming from Norway to this country. And well, the main part of it was his first Christmas Eve here, how he was working at a farm, but they didn't allow him to eat with the family. In fact, he got even very little food on Christmas Eve, and then he was sleeping out in the barn, and he had dreamed about being at home. And that was a story that was done.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I might say that I was born in Norway as a small boy. Dad sold his farm there and came to America. It was back in 1905. He had a bunch of 8 milking cows, and he had a great big farm there, and some sheep and some, and a horse at that time. And sold his farm and took off for Canada. Took a boat, went over to England and took another boat from there and then went to Quebec, you know. And took the train from there to Montreal and all, all to Alberta, Canada. He said, home city, he had 3 first cousins there, you know. He had to go so far to get a homestead, so one of the boys, and he worked in Verde, British Columbia, so he went off with him. Got a job there and his partner. So then we came, Jupiter and his family came in. We started on the prairie, they didn't go to school there, we went about 3 weeks or something like that. And we couldn't understand a word of English, you know. So then in Jupiter, you know, well, they were a helpful day, they got there, you know, school, they didn't, the teachers were so interested in us. Gee. Yeah, give them all kinds of help, you know.
Really?
They were 4 in the family, their children.
Do you remember that, or is it, or were these what was told you? How old were you when that happened?
Well, I was about 8 years old.
Oh, so you remember.
A lot of years of them.
Yeah.
I met the school there, it's so nice day for them. We were there for about, I don't know, about 2 years, attorney. So then Daddy had a cousin, didn't there, Bremerton, so they took off. And he was out there in the Navy Yard and met cousin there. And so then he came off there and he, his family came off later on while they here. He bought a Tom Paul's for them from there, you know, and he bought a home there. So then we came there and we separated the Paul's for them. That's how I grew up there, you know. That's near, well, it's near Bremerton.
Yeah.
North of Bremerton. Mm-hmm. It was the canal bridge there, so I grew up there. Mm-hmm. So that was that.
Yeah, amazing. I see.
Well, I had heard when I was a child just a very few things about my great-grandparents. I knew that my great-grandfather had died at the age of 26, and that my great-grandmother was fairly young, 48, I think it was, when she died. But I never really heard much about their early life. Except the one thing I knew, that they came over on a sailing ship and it took many weeks, like I think it was 8 or 9 weeks to cross from the Great Britain over to New York. But after my parents had died and I was going through some of the things at the house, I kind of patched together a little more story for myself. And I found in the old family Bible that my great-grandmother had been married at the age of 14. By the age of 19, she was a widow with three children. And that then she came to the Midwest where she had some relatives.
Gosh.
Oh. No wonder she died at 48.
Yeah. We went to see my wife and I, Nyla and I, went to see my mother last February. She was living for some winter months near Phoenix. She was sitting, I don't know if it was in the trailer court where she has a trailer, or if it was somewhere else at some occasion. But anyway, as is often the case, like in the dining room at Holden Village, people start asking names and where are you from and how long have you been here and how long are you staying and so on and so forth. And the person that she was talking with, one of the people in the group there, asked her if her maiden name was Laverne Peterson. And this was a woman who was about 15 years older than my mother, who was about 65. And my mother said yes, she was. And this woman said, well, I just want you to know that I was the one who gave you your first spanking. I was the assistant to my mother, who is the midwife who delivered you. And my mother held you up and I patted you on the butt. And then this woman proceeded to tell my mother at age 65 the details of her being born. Who was there? Mm-hmm. What happened? And so my mother found out that her dad cut her umbilical cord. And Nyla and I just chuckled about it because we thought we were such moderns because I was in the delivery room when our son was born. You know, here it was the father's place to be there, assist in the delivery, although the midwife had the major responsibility, but the father had the task of cutting the umbilical cord. So. But isn't that amazing at 65 to hear about your own birth from someone who was the assistant and who's 80 years old?
Well, how did she recognize your mother?
That's a good question. I don't know. I didn't get all the... that's a good question. I have to ask my mother that question. I think she didn't recognize her by sight. She recognized her from this conversation about where you were from and so on, and had known something about the family. I mean, this other person knew that she had married Erasmus and et cetera. Yeah. And so thus the question arose. We can tell stories and that's fine. I guess it concerns me that it doesn't seem like people are telling the stories from one generation to the next. And I may just be wrong about that, but I'm kind of reporting on an earlier evening here. Because I think the fact is that in most of our lives, there are things that we remember that come in story form that are very important.
I remember when I was in high school, I lived in my grandfather's house because my father had died previously. And I had a great opportunity to learn a lot from him because he wasn't very handy with his hands. He didn't have to do any work around because he lived in town and there wasn't much to do. And so he sat in his rocking chair. Mm-hmm. And you know, we were in and around a lot, and he'd get to talking, and I think it's too bad that we don't learn sooner that we should listen to things like mm-hmm. that. Because I was a teenager, and I heard him tell a few things, and I heard it enough to not be interested. Oh. And I've kicked myself so many times uh-huh. since. And he was very interested in music and sang a lot. And he would sit and hum, and he would sing all these Norwegian folk uh-huh. songs. Well, it turned out that I did learn a lot of them because we had books with him. Uh-huh. But I'm sure he sang songs that I could have found more about. And he used to tell me about some of his dating way back in Norway and the fun he had going to dances. And I thought, well, that's just another story.
Yeah, just another
and
story.
And now I just
yeah.
like to hear it.
Yeah, yeah. In the back.
Well, I was just thinking about why this is so mm-hmm. concerned too and mm-hmm. and wondering about a couple of things. And I have a hunch that possibly we've been affected by the revolution that we've lived through just in the last decade or two in terms of really a lot more popular psychology asking us to look at ourselves, the way that the humanistic psychology has asked us to look at ourselves and our lives. And we look too more deeply at the lives of our families and much more than we did even 15 or 20 years ago. We say, why? Why did we do that? Or why did they do that? Or what's behind this? And I hope that we come to a point of maturation where we integrate these things mm-hmm. and let them be without asking so many questions. So that we look at some of these old stories and rather than just accept them as that's the way it was and that's the way they were and they're a part of me and they're, we hope, a loving part of me, mm-hmm. I think we're more analytical at this point in history.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if we don't find sometimes it's embarrassing or we mm-hmm. say, well, I wonder if that's what happened then, and then this happened, and so on. And yeah, I think we're just at a stage where we're really introspective, and hopefully,
we move immediately to talking about it rather than passing it along.
May I make a suggestion to those of you who are younger, and there are a lot of you who are. My mother, when my mother was 90. Our family is interested in these old stories, our younger ones. When my mother was 90, she was a person who wasn't very likely to be sitting around telling a bunch of stories. But by leading her out, we had a tape of her stories, of her childhood, and her memories of her growing up and her marriage, her courtship, her marriage, the whole thing. We ended up with an hour or and a half long tape from her memories, and I wished we had done it with my father yeah. and had the viewpoint of the man. But there was so much of interest to me, and then in turn to my children, and I know it will be interesting mm-hmm. to my great-grandchildren. Mm-hmm. It is personal family history, and I think those stories are enjoyable without being introspective about and analyzing anything. If they're mm-hmm. interesting to the future generations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wish I had done that.
Which is the point of making. That's just mm-hmm. the point. Is that we, you know, we need not, ought not analyze, but I think that might be one of the things that's correct.
Mm-hmm.
follow that up, a very good friend of ours, well, he's retired now, he's 74, I think, but he was an excellent architect, and he comes from a family of doctors. And he sat down after he retired and prepared a book. I think it's that thick. He just sat down with a typewriter and wrote all these things that he knew about his dad and mom, and gave the story of all the different things that happened through his younger life and all the way through. And it is the most interesting thing to imagine. But he didn't think anything of it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a wonderful thing that you can pass on.
Yes.
This was not a story that was passed down to me. It should have been, but I read it in these historical books that they had. I think it was 1950, but I found out that my great-grandmother left Germany as a widow with her 7 children.
Mm-hmm.
Which raises a lot of questions. You know, how did they get fare for 8 people? Why did they leave?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had the experience that you mentioned of talking with my parents this summer. I had given a talk, and there was a tape recording of the talk that I'd given. And we sat one day, my mom and dad and I, and listened to that. And at the end of it, they just both kind of looked at me and looked at each other and said, "Do you know why you are that way? Why do you have some of the ideas that you do?" Because I was talking about to some college students about the subject, who is your neighbor, and what it means to be a neighbor and to be neighbored. And for me, the richest stories of that in my own experience come from other cultures, from Native Americans, from Mexicans, from Africans, from Asians. And so I was sharing some of these stories. And so mom and dad proceeded to tell me for about 45 minutes where my own sensitivity to other cultural people had come from, out of their experience and out of my early childhood. Some things which I knew and some things which I didn't. And the thing that was neat was that I had the other side of that tape that I'd made my speech on. So I just flipped it over, pressed the button, when we both talked. And it was interesting I asked them where they got their sensitivity to this, and then began to hear some of their stories of their childhood in Oklahoma and in Maine and in Illinois, things that I had not heard before.
Mm-hmm.
One of the stories that they like to tell is that when I was born, they were living in Phoenix, Arizona, working at Cook Indian Training School, which was a lay training center for many Native American peoples of the Southwestern tribes. And one of their good friends was a Navajo woman who became my grandmother. And she was the woman that I knew from my earliest days. And when my white grandmother, my real grandmother, came to visit me, I wouldn't go to her because her skin wasn't dark enough. And this offended my real grandmother.
That Cook Training School is for Indians, isn't it?
Yes.
Getting ready for the ministry.
Yes.
Work on the reservation.
Yes. Mm-hmm. My dad worked there for
Yes.
Well, I was kind of interested in the family history because I've been back to Norway several times. You know, I had a relation there, was an expert at it, so I got him to write up the family history. So I got it back to 1400. You know, the church books there, you know, they made had a record, you know, to that time. You know, that they had when the birth and then when they were baptized, and then the children and all the family.
Mm-hmm.
The whole family was—you kept track of it, you know. There's the church books, and they say the church books, and that's what this fellow used, you know. That's sort of an expert. So I got the family history back to 1400. Mm-hmm. You know, that's quite a long way. Very interesting.
Yes. can imagine. Did any of you have stories that you remember which weren't about family? There were other stories. I mean, favorite, I don't know, adventures or fairy tales or... I mean, do you recall stories that have stayed with you that then you have passed along or would want to pass along? No?
We had a funny little one that I found special that was told about my mom long after I was growing up. She and a friend had gone, this is in Tacoma, figured that Aunt Hilda, you know, had all these kids and needed help. Her husband didn't work that much anyway. They thought, you know, instead of taking a loaf of bread, they'd take more. So they started out on the bus or the streetcar, I guess it was in, and had to transfer, nice spring day. And by the time they got there, like an hour later, this dishpan with this batch of bread was getting higher and higher.
Oh,
so they went on the porch and said, hurry and get the pan. And they were laughing so hard. Had a grand time.
I guess the way to prepare the history of the family or stories and whatnot is to, as they come to your mind, jot them down, and then the date, and then keep doing that for a long time, and then you can gradually sift them together and make a complete story.
Any more why we don't seem to be a storytelling people anymore, that was mentioned earlier, that seems to have gone through a period now where we are much more analytical rather than oriented to simply passing things along. And other reasons? I mean,
I know a lot of it for my parents was painful.
Uh-huh. Yeah, as you mentioned, the depression. They didn't care to remember that. Or if they did remember it, it wasn't a treasure to pass along to the next generation. Although, I guess people have different experiences of that. My parents told a lot of stories about the depression. Some of them were painful. But I don't think, it sounded to me like your father, for him it was traumatic, not simply painful. Yeah. Whereas in my parents' case, it wasn't traumatic. Those were hard times, but they weren't times that they didn't any longer want to talk about.
My mom told the story about when she was during the Depression. For Christmas, there was 12 children. They would get one apple. It would be sliced into 12 pieces. And she would sit there and just lick it for hours and hours and hours until it was just nothing.
Even getting one apple a piece would be different.
Until Saskatchewan, it wasn't like that at all. BC wasn't affected too badly. It was hard. But when my grandmother was married, my grandfather, I don't know the details, he would go out to work, and after work he would go and spend his money in the bar. So my grandmother was left with three babies to build her own house out of mud and straw. I have a picture, it was just a room. Really interesting. Now that they've never been a communicating family, and openly speak, so now that I am finding out about things, this fascinates me. Mm-hmm. Thank you, everybody. I have to go.
Is there any speculation on, you know, do we have occasions, regular occasions for, I don't mean now let's all gather around and tell stories, but the sort of the course of the day, providing opportunity. One does have to wonder anyway whether other media other than human beings close to oneself aren't haven't usurped the role of telling the formative stories. My father was not a person who talked a lot, told a lot of stories, but I do remember hearing a lot of stories from him, partly because we were just around all the time and there were quiet times, and you filled the spaces with conversation, and then the conversation included stories. Whereas it seems to me now that there's much less conversation and time for conversation among a lot of family members. There could be.
They're never home.
Right. No. When they are home.
Waste too much time listening to TV.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, there's a real question of whether the place of television.
And there's another
all of this.
There's another danger coming in beyond television, and that is home computers.
Mm-hmm.
I just visited some friends in California who have a home computer, and he said, "Let me show you the home computer and all that I do on it." And she said, "I wish we'd never gotten it because he never talks to me anymore. Mm-hmm. He spends every night at the home computer. Mm-hmm. It takes 5 nights to set it up to run for one night, and apparently, you know, to him, this was just a toy. It was just a delight. It is a very intriguing sort of thing if you get into it. I spent a little while and could see right away where you could get intrigued, and the time just flips by."
Yeah.
And they both said to us, "Don't get a home computer if you value your relationship and your time and your family life."
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, we're talking, I hadn't heard that before, and we're talking a lot about all that is going to save us, but I think we need some warning signals on those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what does it do to human relationships?
I think another thing that's for young children is, I find this with our grandchildren, that they have so many things, you know, to play with, and they're so busy doing so many things and piling up these toys and so on. They don't listen. If you talk to them, mm-hmm. They just don't listen.
And if they do something, they don't tell it either.
Yeah, it's really hard to communicate with the children. I find that it is.
One of my clear recollections of my childhood was, I think I can tell you what night of the week, I think it was Tuesday night. Is that right for the Gillette Blue Blade sponsored fights? Boxing fights? Was it Tuesday night? Yeah, I think so. But, and that's another medium. I mean, there was a sound coming into the room. But I remember very clearly my dad on the floor, my younger brother, and I on the floor every Tuesday night. We had a date to be down on the floor listening to the radio sat on the floor. That's why we were down on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing I remember is being around. My father had a service station. And there were lots of quiet times during the day, and we were just always around, so there were bound to the time when we'd talk with one another. And where there weren't the diversions, whether it's a pile of things
mm-hmm.
or computer or something else, just weren't that many different things. It was far from austere. I don't mean to make it sound like it was. Mm-hmm. Was austere, wasn't.
We've had a family business since the children were fairly young. Our youngest was 8 when we started. And we have, over the course of the years, had a lot of conversation, I think, with our children. But now when I get, you know, when the next generation is, well, I just can't seem to break into that, that television, toy, tearing around. So,
mm-hmm. you know?
And dancing and all this girl activity.
our children came home during the holidays this year, and I think almost every night they were there, we spent time with old movies, and in the old movies are the grandparents the great grandparents, and so as each one come up, oh, remember this, remember that. And it are many evenings we spent that way, going over this and this and this, and reviewing family
occurrences, which is a piece of modern technology that set it off.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Our son, who's 12, always wants to know if I mention something about his grandparents or great-grandparents. I mean, there's a natural curiosity there. So it isn't that it's lacking. But I don't think we hear it nearly enough occasionally.
I read a lot of stories to my children.
Oh.
And the other day, it reminded me that I had done that because my granddaughter was asking for the Uncle Wiggily books because she wanted to read those to her child. She remembered the Uncle Wiggily books.
Yeah.
But if your son is interested in that, don't you think that you've had a little a part in fostering that?
Well, maybe, but I think there is just a curiosity about in children about what is wrong before, where did we come from kind of thing. I think that's just there.
No. But maybe you've given them the opportunity
because
observing parents through teaching,
mm-hmm.
I found that they have tremendous influence on what their interests are.
Sure. We'll bring things to a close. Walt Wanderin was on teaching staff just a few weeks ago, and his whole way of teaching was to tell stories. And the Wanderins have four children of their own. Two of them are their own biological children, two are adopted, so the four children are only a couple, about 3 years apart from oldest to youngest. They're all sort of together. And that family has made a habit of telling children, telling stories, often making up stories, in which they play back the patterns of behavior among the children in the family. So big sister, little brother, and so on. Only then the parents will tell a story using other figures and will, in fact, be relating what's happening in the family by way of other figures. And one of those stories is going to be published before too long. You might keep an eye out for it. It's a fairy tale called Thistle. And I won't tell you the story because I don't remember the details, but it was beautiful to listen to Walt tell about it, because the younger daughter was always in a position of feeling that she had been put upon. She was more vulnerable than the other children. And the hero of the story turns out to be a thistle who felt the left out one and felt a kind of ugly duckling kind of thing. You can recall another story. But Thistle is the hero of the story. And then this story evolved in the family, and every time the daughter would get into one of these positions, and she was really tearful about it, she would say, "Daddy, won't you tell me the story about Thistle?" So they'd tell the story about Thistle. And it was a way of making it okay, because there was a happy ending there in a sad situation, and that happy ending was communicated by a story. I just think it's terribly important. And Walt tells those stories to his kids and makes them up because his father told him stories, and his father had an imaginary figure by the name of Ambrose. Ambrose did this, the great adventures of Ambrose, and a different adventure. Not every time, but the set of adventures of Ambrose. And Walt says to this day, he can't hear the name Ambrose without warming to whomever is called Ambrose. You know, there really is something formative in people's lives by the tales they hear that makes it shapes who they are.
We tell a fun little story about our oldest daughter. She was like 15 and a half months old when the next one was born, and we left her with sister-in-law of mine. And while she was there, she tumbled somehow from the crib that was different and got a shiner. So she's kind of little for one of those. But then we came to get her when we brought the new one home from the hospital. And the brother-in-law and sister-in-law had gone on another trip, so they left her with my grandma and grandpa. You know, so we were around about to pick up the little one, and when we got her, Grandpa Bob said the merchandise was damaged when we got it.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll just bring this to a close. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.